Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org.
Just about 1 month until Virginians elect their next governor. I'm May Lily Lee. Thanks for joining us. On this edition of Virginia Conversations, we continue to introduce you to the candidates hoping to occupy the governor's mansion. Last month, we brought you extended interviews with Republican Ken Cuccinelli and Democrat Terry McAuliffe. We'll be taking your calls later in the program, but now here's the Libertarian candidate for governor. Robert Sarvis, welcome to Virginia Conversations.
Thank you for having me.
We want to talk a little bit about the issues that brought you to this race for governor. But first, what is your overall vision for Virginia?
My vision for Virginia is a Virginia that's open-minded and open for business, a Virginia that protects both economic freedom and personal liberty, a Virginia that doesn't tilt the playing field in the business sector in favor of corporate interests that give money to the government, legislators, and candidates. That protects an equal playing field for all and protects freedom and equality across the board.
You're a libertarian. Is it safe to say that a libertarian generally can be defined as a disgruntled Republican, or is that really not a fair characterization?
No, not at all. That's not fair at all. I think that we are very principled in our belief in freedom, and you know we our ideas attract both Republicans and Democrats, and I think your listeners will see why throughout the course of this interview.
And let me explain why I'm going down that path. Plenty of Republicans feel that there should be less government. You're taking that to a whole nother level.
Well, Republicans say they want less government, but in the economic sector or in economic policy, you see that constantly proven false with increased spending under Republican administrations, both at the state and federal levels. And then when it comes to personal liberty, it's a total hypocrisy. They don't believe in liberty at all.
Let's talk about that when it comes to drug reform. I think that's a really great example of the dichotomy there among liberals and conservatives. What is your stance on drug reform?
I'm in favor of reforming our drug laws to give greater freedom to people. I would like to see marijuana legalized. I think that our policy on marijuana ruins a lot of lives and livelihoods by giving people criminal records for smoking a drug that isn't particularly dangerous. It costs a lot of money, the enforcement and incarceration spending that we do. It ruins a lot of communities and families. There are a lot of racial disparities in how we enforce the laws. And also, the drug war has led to a lot of problems with civil liberties, loss of Fourth Amendment rights, and other things.
That does feel like a more liberal view, and yet coming from a place of let's remove government from the equation.
That's right. Although the Democrats have not made any movement in Virginia to liberalize our drug laws. And so it is left to people like me to push that forward, and I'm the only candidate who's talking about that.
Doesn't that have more to do with being in Virginia versus being a Democrat or a Republican, for that matter?
Not necessarily. I mean, Virginia does have a small carve-out for medical marijuana use, but, you know, we need to expand that and preferably legalize it entirely. And I don't think, you know, there are 48 states that don't have legalized marijuana, and I think that we should be on the cutting edge of that movement. And the Libertarian Party and libertarians generally have been well ahead of the game on this and many other issues.
To quote you on drug reform is so much more than drugs. It's about respect for a person's freedom, and autonomy should be the default rule in a free society. Responsible drug use that does not harm others should not be punished. That's the end of that quote. Now, before folks think, well, here's a gubernatorial candidate who just wants us to be lawless, explain your ideas around protecting people, around law enforcement.
Well, I think that it's important to realize that libertarians do believe in law, and we do believe that laws that protect us from harms by others are very important. So what defines liberty candidates and people who believe in freedom is a presumption that you should be able to live your life as you see fit, run your business as you see fit, without interference, as long as you're not hurting other people.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about marriage equality and its role in this race for governor. Already, Cuccinelli, of course, has said he is not for marriage equality. McAuliffe has said he is. However, you're disgruntled with both.
That's right. I think that marriage equality is an important issue. The way we look at marriage as a social institution has changed, and I don't think we should be using government and the state constitution to impede social changes. I do think that it's a matter of freedom and equality. If we're going to have government in the business of regulating marriage, that we should make it equally available to same-sex couples. And as the only person in this race whose marriage was once illegal in this state, I think I have a very unique perspective, and I think
because
it's worth fighting for.
Because of your interracial marriage.
That's right. And I'm also mixed race. I'm half Asian. And the law, as it was written 50 years ago, before it was struck down, would have made my parents' marriage illegal as well. Although I don't know that it was actually enforced equally as white Asian marriages. I don't think it was equally enforced as it was against white black marriages.
So our listeners understand you're half Asian, half Caucasian. Your wife is African American.
That's right.
Okay, so, and you have two kids.
That's right.
Would you give us a little background on your vitae? We have folks who are new to the legislative arena, you among them. Tell us about your resume.
Sure. Educationally, I've studied math at Harvard and the University of Cambridge. I have a law degree from New York University and an economics master's from George Mason University. I've worked as a software developer in San Francisco, a mobile app developer in Virginia, a lawyer, and math teacher. And I ran for state senate 2 years ago as a Republican up in Northern Virginia. I lost that race, but I learned a lot. One of the things I learned was that the Republican Party is not a very good vehicle for liberty candidates. And so this race, I'm running as a libertarian.
All right, we're going to tap into that math background. Let's talk about job creation and economic growth and your vision for Virginia.
Sure. The most important thing is to have an open society with open and competitive markets. That's why my campaign theme is a Virginia that's open-minded and open for business. We want good economic policy, and that doesn't mean the governor or the government trying to pick winners and losers or guess which industries are going to be the industries of the future. What we ought to have is a level playing field, open, low barriers to entry, light regulation that is solely in the public interest rather than what we currently have, which is a lot of corporate interests getting tax policy and regulatory policy that protects them from competition and protects their private profits. So we should have a flexible economy. An open and competitive economy is a flexible economy that can move people from industries in decline to industries that are growing.
I'm going to talk about gun rights as well, and a lot of this will echo your stance on drug reform. You know, making decriminalizing marijuana. This sort of applies as well to gun rights. Explain.
That's right. I mean, in the first instance, people should be able to exercise their gun rights, their Second Amendment rights, and we shouldn't be burdening law-abiding gun owners in a quest to reduce gun violence. The studies show that gun control laws don't decrease gun violence, and we know what does cause gun violence. A very large percentage of gun violence is caused by the drug war and the prohibition mentality. Our prohibition of drugs and criminalization of drugs creates a very well-armed, very well-funded, very violent criminal enterprise. And just as the end of prohibition of alcohol led to a decade-long decline in violence, it seems certain that ending the drug war will also have salutary benefits in that direction.
We're talking about issues relating to Virginia, from drug reform to gun rights, job creation, that sort of thing. However, a lot of people might wonder if one were to set aside all those issues, that people might perk up and take an interest in you just because you're not Terry McAuliffe and you're not Ken Cuccinelli.
Right. I do think the other two candidates exemplify everything that's wrong with their respective parties. But, you know, it's important, and in that vein, I think it's important to realize that elections are where we hold not just people and individual candidates, but also political parties accountable. And so when the Republicans and Democrats keep serving the special interests of their backers rather than average Virginians, then we have a real problem. The only way to hold them accountable is to not vote for either of those parties and to vote for someone who's arguing for the rule of law.
I want to talk a little bit about healthcare. There's a quote. I'm going to read it from you. I'm the only candidate for governor who understands healthcare economics. That's bold.
Bold and true. I've studied enough to know that, you know, a lot of the pathologies in our healthcare system are directly a result of decades of misregulation of the healthcare market by both the federal and state governments. And I'm the only person who's talking about getting rid of a lot of those regulations that create perverse incentives, increase costs, cartelize the supply of healthcare professionals, expanding the role of nurses, giving them more independent practice freedom. A lot of the regulations are caused or come from the federal government, and we don't have as much control over those, but we also have state level regulations and we're really shooting ourselves in the foot.
We have this big issue of Medicaid expansion before us. Should Virginia take the $20 billion+ from the federal government that would be coming down over 7 years and accept the monies and incorporate those monies, or should we not? Cuccinelli and McAuliffe are on opposite ends of the issue. Where do you fall?
Well, I certainly don't think it's a good idea to increase the amount of federal control over our policies in the state. And one of the things that we should be arguing for is more policy freedom. So certainly the case, certainly I would not, I oppose expansion of Medicaid unless we were to have substantial policy freedom in setting up our own systems and policies. And I think that when people argue, oh, well, what about a certain number of people who are going to get Medicaid benefits under the expansion, well, it's a very naive argument to just accept the claims that are being made about what's going to happen under a Medicaid expansion. It's an enormous amount of money that's going to be spent. We don't know if the federal dollars are going to continue, and it seems certain that they won't. But healthcare spending at the state level is the main driver of budget stress across the country. And so we have to be very careful that we're not just expanding an entitlement program that's going to bankrupt the state and put taxpayers continually on the hook.
Is it fair, just for simplifying things a bit, to say then that you lean a little bit more toward Cuccinelli on the issue of Medicaid expansion?
Well, I think I'm much more principled and able to argue an economic case for what I'm saying much better. So I'd say that maybe he leans a little bit more towards my position. I would say, you know, it's not just about the Medicaid expansion. It's about so many different federal laws and regulations and the tax-exempt status of the preferential tax treatment of employer-mandated of employer-provided health insurance that channels a lot more spending through through insurance contracts. It changes the incentives that consumers of healthcare have. It changes the way that doctors bill. It totally destroys any sort of price transparency. So there's no economizing going on. And that's a huge factor in why healthcare spending is kind of out of control.
I'd like you to spend a little bit of time on each of these parts. You have a three-part approach to overhauling public health care spending. The first is that you suggest that we focus on catastrophic, not comprehensive insurance.
Right. Well, there are kind of two aspects to it. But the basic idea is that in a system of comprehensive health insurance provided by taxpayers, decisions are made based on politics, not on need and economics and things like that. What studies appear to show is that all of this vast amounts of spending don't result in better health outcomes substantially to justify the cost. What they do is protect people from financial ruin, and that's what a focus on catastrophic care would be better at. It would be more cost effective at doing.
And a second facet is mental health care spending.
Right. I think that studies have shown that public spending on mental health has high returns. And so I think that, you know, we can shift more of the public spending towards mental health. And then the third aspect would be the what remaining spending we can do through cash subsidies that give individuals and families more flexibility in meeting their individual healthcare needs, and that will create a much more competitive and innovative healthcare sector.
Let's talk about civil liberties, because this is what makes this particular party platform so unique. Talk about the tenets of civil liberties as seen through libertarian eyes.
Well, it's generally civil liberties is something that is very focused on freedom, that we should be able to live our lives without the government kind of taking an adversarial view of us. With the drug war, civil liberties have really taken a hit, and with the war on terrorism now it's even worse. But the idea is simply that, you know, the government exists to protect our rights. We don't exist to sort of be, you know, spied on. We don't exist to fund the government. The government exists to protect our rights. And so when you have, the ABC enforcement agency in Charlottesville sending six people out to aggressively challenge a young woman who had bought sparkling water, that just shows that it's totally out of whack. We have in Fairfax County, all of the warrants are served with SWAT teams, regardless of whether it's a violent crime or a nonviolent crime or a victimless crime, and it's just kind of out of control. I don't blame law enforcement officers. I blame politicians for setting up the institutions and incentives that produce this result. And I just think that we need to, look at all the enforcement policies and especially the laws that are being enforced to change the way that police and citizens interact and have a much more trust-based partnership.
As far as libertarians go, there is no libertarian congressman, senator, or governor. This is a long shot. What's in it for you?
Well, we're realistic about our chances, but we are running to make a big difference in this race. For one thing, I do think that it's important to get people out voting in favor of freedom and the rule of law. As I said, elections are about accountability. It's also about, you know, if we reach 10%, Libertarian Party becomes a recognized party in the state where we don't have to spend enormous resources just to get on the ballot. But I also think it's important to push this forward, this talk about freedom under the rule of law, because we have so much special interest money backing both the Republican and the Democrat, and not just in this race. Everybody knows it's a problem. And so we have a lot of laws that, restrict economic activity, that invade our personal privacy. And the only way to push back against this is to vote against both parties who are the authors of all these bad laws.
If you were an average citizen and you weren't running for governor under the Libertarian ticket, who would you vote for governor?
Well, I don't know that I would vote for either of the current candidates from the major parties.
You would abstain from voting for either McCulloch or Cuccinelli?
Most likely. Voting for the lesser of two evils is a bad strategy, and doing that for the last several decades is what has led to the crisis of spending in Washington and the sort of total destruction of the idea of rule of law in Virginia.
Robert Sarvis, Libertarian candidate for governor, thanks so much for joining us on Virginia Conversations.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. We want to acknowledge that the Virginia Education Association has endorsed Terry McCullough for governor and that the organization is an underwriter of this program. Stay with us. Our political roundtable convenes in just a moment. Today, we're discussing the race for governor in Virginia. We just heard from Libertarian candidate Robert Sarvis. That interview, as well as our previous interviews with Republican Ken Cuccinelli and Democrat Terry McAuliffe, can be heard on the web at virginiapublicradio.org. Just search for Virginia Conversations. Or on Facebook, like Virginia Conversations, and you'll find those interviews plus more information on past and upcoming topics. Now, here to discuss the November elections, in the Richmond studio, Bob Lewis, political reporter for the Associated Press. And from his office in Norfolk, we welcome Don Luzzatto, editorial page editor of the Virginian Pilot. I'd like to start with you, Don, a little bit around the Sarvis interview we just heard. What is your thought around his ability to make any play here?
I think his ability to make a play is sort of predicated on the fact that the other two candidates are so weak this time around. And I think he's filling a niche that personally I find interesting. You know, he said the Republican Party isn't a very good vehicle for liberty candidates, I think was his phrase. And so I think what you've got is his positions on lack of regulation, on Medicaid expansion, are very much within the wheelhouse of the Republican Party, and his positions on, you know, gay marriage and on drug legalization, I'm not sure where drug legalization falls these days, but in any event, I think there's the potential here that he could actually pull some voters from both parties. But I think the reason that we're even talking about him is fundamentally that both McAuliffe and Cuccinelli are very weak candidates, historically weak candidates.
And Bob, you and I were talking earlier about how he is making inroads, perhaps better than even Russ Potts, who was an insider.
Right. Russ was a Republican who ran as an independent. Russ wasn't trying to establish a party label out there as Sarvis is. What you've got to remember, and I think Sarvis mentioned this in his interview, 10% is a magic number. He got 10% in one of the two Washington polls earlier this week. 10% can do two things. 10% is sometimes a threshold in debates for inclusion. Debates have to set a criteria by which candidates qualify for the debate. A common threshold is often 10%. I don't know. There's one more debate coming on. I don't know what their threshold is, but you know, if it's 10%, then maybe Sarvis could say, "Hey, look, I have a legitimate right to be on that stage." The second thing 10% does is it, in Virginia, it gives you legal standing as under state law as a political party. What that means is that your party has a right to put its nominee on the general ballot, and you don't have to spend all the money he was talking about with petition drives and you know, to get the signatures required, 10,000 signatures statewide to get on the statewide ballot. So that's a big figure. And if he can sustain that, then I think he's on to something. But the major parties have been wearing out their welcome for some time. You saw some of that in the hangover from last year's election, and you're going to see a lot more of it over the next week as this intensely partisan battle over the budget and the continuing resolution and whether to fund the Health Care Act plays out in Washington and how close we get to the brink of a government shutdown.
Don Lozado, on the surface, one might assume that a Libertarian candidate would take away some Republican votes, but dig a little deeper on that.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily true for Mr. Sarvis, because he is a real Libertarian. He's not a Republican posing as a Libertarian, as you see on the national level in many cases. I mean, this guy actually has some principles undergirding his positions. Essentially, he wants the government out of our bedrooms and out of a lot of our personal decisions. Now, that you can contrast that fairly easily with Mr. Cuccinelli's position on a whole variety of things. So that sort of that automatically makes him different. So I think. And I think his position on gay marriage, for example, is largely, although he would disagree, indistinguishable from McAuliffe's position. So I think he's got the spectrum of positions that he's taken really run the gamut. And so depending on what you think is important, you know, the issue that's animating your vote, I think you can, you know, whether you're a very liberal Democrat or a very conservative Republican, you can find something in his platform to pull the lever for.
And Bob Lewis, before we take our first caller, what does your crystal ball say? Do you think that Sarvis will be able to sustain enough of that 10% hold to get into a televised debate with Cuccinelli and McAuliffe?
We've got one more cycle of polling to go before the next debate. And again, I have no idea what the criteria. I'm not involved in that debate at all. I have no idea what their criteria are. I just know that from past experience, 10% has been a threshold. As a rule, third-party or independent candidates tend to bleed off some of their support in polling the closer we get to Election Day. People think twice about it. People go, well, I'm throwing my vote away. So whether he builds on the momentum he's established so far or whether there's that classic bleed off we see, I don't know yet. I've never really seen a race quite like this. The closest thing we have in Virginia experience to compare this to recently is 1994. Chuck Robb, Ollie North, with Marshall Coleman running as an independent. But Marshall Coleman in that race had the backing of John Warner. So he was a legitimate threat to Ollie North. And there are a lot of people who to this day say that he's the reason Chuck Robb won a second Senate term in 94. Sarvis is different. Sarvis is he's getting his support largely because, as the polls reflect, these are two very unpopular major party candidates. I've never seen anything quite like this, and nobody that I talk to has ever seen anything quite like this.
And the prevailing word, again, there are always questions around the actual points, but the prevailing word on the street that McAuliffe has about a 20-point lead over Cuccinelli right now?
Oh, no.
No, okay.
No. I mean, it's within the margin on one of the polls. The Quinnipiac poll last week, which is one of several that we use, showed him, I believe, within the margin. I think the Post poll may have shown him with a slight lead, which means it's just outside of the whatever the 3 percentage point margin or whatever it was. But it's a very close race.
Yeah, my sense on that, Mabel, is that there's just a regular Republicans of my acquaintance and some friends have been asking more about Sarvis than I would have expected. Now, this follows on just generalized disgust with the quality of both candidates. So these are people who would ordinarily pull the lever for a Republican and have no interest. And so we're planning on voting for McAuliffe, and then Sarvis has sort of emerged a little bit into their consciousness in the last month or so, and they want to know more about him.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing, too. And yesterday, on my trip back from covering the gubernatorial debate and the lieutenant governor debate the night before that, I just made some stops along Highway 1 just talking to ordinary people about this race and the cost of politics and things like that. And There's legitimate interest in the third party. Some people say, yeah, I'm voting for the Libertarian because, at heart I'm a Libertarian anyway. Other people say, I'm going to look at that third party guy. What's his name? They don't write. They can't recall his name, yep. But they know he's out there. And so that makes me think he might still have some potential to grow.
And you heard that third party guy, Robert Sarvis, say that he wouldn't have voted for either candidate. He wanted himself to be the third party person to vote for, so he wouldn't have to not vote.
I wish I had thought of that question when we interviewed him.
What you may have been thinking about as far as the 20-point lead, May Lilly, is McAuliffe does have a substantial advantage, the polls indicate, among women voters. And I think that's that maybe that's what you were thinking about. But that's also something that that Ken has to address in the next 40 days or so.
We have a call. Good morning, Martin from Williamsburg.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Just great.
Interested in listening, and I'm full disclosure. I'm a lifelong Catholic conservative, and I'm totally against. I think abortion and I think true freedom and the prosperity that we have in this country depends on a basic moral law among people, and you can't be a pragmatist in terms of deciding that man is going to make these laws.
Now, what did you say? Moral law? What was the word you used?
Well, natural law. You can't decide. You can't be a pragmatist and have, like man, master of the universe is going to decide the good and evil and what's right and what's wrong. You can't get good ends with flawed means. And unfortunately, this is a whole, morality is a whole thing. And when you abandon, and Christianity means that everybody has a right to use his own talents, it is the ultimate freedom. It's the freedom from death. It's the ability to say, nobody's going to make a slave of me. That's what the ultimate freedom is.
Now, let me clarify. Did you have a comment on the Libertarian Party specifically?
Well, yes, they're going to siphon enough votes from the Republican candidate that we're going to end up with McAuliffe, who's a big union guy, which is totally against the traditions of Virginia. He's not a right-to-work guy. He is going to be, it's going to pervert and it's going to destroy Virginia's economic standing and chance for prosperity.
Thank you for calling in, Martin.
That's my comment.
Yes, we appreciate your comment. So Martin will be casting his vote for Cuccinelli and feels, as we talked about earlier, Don, he does feel that Sarvis will be siphoning some of those Republican votes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's certainly the traditional way this works. But I'm just like Mr. Sarvis. I guess I'm sort of disenchanted with both the candidates, so I'm not entirely convinced that the usual dynamic's going to be at play here.
I agree with Don. It's a conventional wisdom, but I'm not sure this is a conventional election.
We have another call from Steve from Newport News. Good morning to you, Steve.
Hi. Good morning. Hi, Maria Lee. How are you?
Great.
I'm calling because I have to admit, it's the first time I really heard anything about the third-party candidate, and I would vote for him. I'm one of those people that when I was born and the doc hit me, I think I said I was a Democrat, so I wouldn't necessarily vote for Ken, but I think like many Democrats, I'm not comfortable with Terry at all for just several reasons, and I thought the third-party candidate was articulate, had good views, and is probably going to get my vote, and I suspect I'm not the only one who feels that way.
Okay, so you provide a good example of a Democrat who might normally vote for McAuliffe, but not in this case.
That's absolutely correct, and as one comment said before, how many elections have we had in Virginia where it's the lesser of two evils, and I'm one of those people who would love a third choice or an alternate that has a chance. And from what I heard this morning, this man has a chance.
Thank you so much for your call this morning, Steve. Bob, you had an interesting profile with Sarvis, and were struck by all of his credentials, even though he's not a political insider.
Right. I'm fascinated by the guy. He's mentally facile. He is he's a very thoughtful guy. Politically, he's let's put it this way. He's not being managed by professionals. With Sarvis, what you see is what you get. He can't afford professionals. He's running his race basically on what it takes to run for city council in Richmond, okay? He travels the state in his wife's minivan with two child seats in the back. And, it's hard to reach the kind of population that you have to with that limit on money and without the ability to get out there in a big way and crisscross the state like the major party candidates have. I mean, these guys burn through millions. Sarvis is making it on thousands, and not many thousands. I mean, yeah, his total fundraising is only within five figures the last time I checked. So the fact that he is doing as well as he's doing in the polls can't be good news for the two major parties. It shows that there's just a lot of voter disaffection with the parties as they've behaved and with these two candidates in particular.
Yeah, and for him it's still a lot of money, personal money, even though it's only thousands. To be able to make a statement or to be able to register your complaint about the lack of good candidates.
Right. He has put some of his own money into it. I think he's raised some money. He's gotten some contributions here and there, but for the most part, he's making it on a shoestring. He was at the debate the other night and standing around outside the debate hall in McLean, and he's just standing in a corner there, and very few people, I think, even recognized him. So I went over and said hello and asked him how he's doing. And I think he's got a huge opportunity here, and I don't know if he recognizes just how huge it is.
We have a call from Norfolk. Good morning to you, Carol.
Hi. I'm a relatively new Virginian. I've only been here about 4 years, and I will vote for the new guy because those other two people are unbelievable.
So you'll vote for Robert Sarvis.
Absolutely. I think one of them's a crook, and the other one hates women. So, you know, I mean, what are the choices?
Robert Sarvis is looking good to you.
He certainly is. I'd vote for Mickey Mouse instead of those two guys.
Where did you come from, Carol? You sound like a Northeaster.
Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Carol is what we call good copy.
Good copy.
Sorry. Yes.
Bob Lewis will be getting your number soon because he'd like to quote you.
She's closer to me, Bob.
I was just so pleased to hear some intelligent person, like the candidate himself, say I won't vote for either one of them, because that's what Americans need to do, is to stop saying, well, I don't want to throw my vote away. You are throwing your vote away when you vote for one of two trained monkeys. You know? That is throwing your vote away. It's also throwing your state away. It's not right. I mean, Americans have to stop thinking they can't do anything and do what they can, which is make people put intelligent human beings up for office and not jerks.
Well, Carol, your comment today was most appreciated.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. I listened to your program a lot.
Thanks so much.
Well, I hope she's still listening. I think one of the things, I mean, there's no question that I think Virginians are unhappy with the major party candidates. But Sarvis's positions are not exactly within the mainstream of Virginia politics. I think especially in Hampton Roads, where Carol lives. I mean,
let's continue that after our break, Don. This reminder that past editions of Virginia Conversations can be heard at virginiapublicradio.org. Find out more at Virginia Conversations. We're back with more in 90 seconds. Today we're talking about the race for governor in Virginia and the three men hoping to win that job, Terry McAuliffe, Ken Cuccinelli, and libertarian Robert Sarvis. Our guests today are Bob Lewis, political reporter for the Associated Press, and Don Luzzatto, editorial page editor of the Virginian Pilot. Jim from Virginia Beach, good morning to you.
Good morning. I'm calling from Virginia Beach. My name's Jim, 60-year-old conservative Republican who is encouraging everybody I know on both sides of the aisle to vote for Robert Sarvis. If we could get 20% of the vote, if he could get 20% of the vote, I think we could send a message to Washington that there's a viable third party and maybe get somebody to get something done up there.
Thank you for your comment. And there's another call from Matt from Roanoke, and good morning to you, Matt.
Hey, I just wanted to comment on someone made the comment that Robert Sarvis was not part of the mainstream. And I just wanted to comment to look at what the mainstream has gotten us. So, why vote for people who can't afford to run for office? Why not vote for someone that's running their campaign from their minivan? It just seems much more, it just seems better.
Thank you for your comment this morning. And Sean from Richmond, you have a question for our guests as well. You're really trying to get to the heart of why Sarvis could gain in popularity here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. You're on air.
Oh, hey. I was just curious, what you guys think about Sarvis gaining all the steam. Is this something that you think is happening because he himself is a likable guy, or because Cuccinelli and McAuliffe are just, people just hate them so much at this point in the race? So I don't know, what do you guys think? Was it a little bit of both, or I just want y'all's opinion on that?
See, all of the above?
Yeah.
All the above.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think Don Luzzatto and Bob Lewis agree.
Yeah, Sarvis is an incredibly smart guy. I mean, you get that within a couple of minutes of sitting down with him. And he's very principled. I mean, his positions are internally consistent, I mean, which is sort of a shock in this race, honestly.
Well, the refreshing point
about
thank you.
The refreshing point about talking to Sarvis is He's not stage managed, and he doesn't keep regurgitating talking points one after another after another. Having covered more campaigns than I care to remember, that's what they become. By the end of the campaign, you can recite what's going to come. You know what's going to come out of a candidate's mouth the next moment because you've heard it time and time and time again on the campaign trail. Sarvis doesn't have the luxury of focus grouped, shop tested talking points, and you can engage him in a pretty deep conversation. That said, he's still somewhat politically naive, you become cynical after a while with all the professional politics, and so it's a little refreshing. But there are things you have to do in the political game to really make the big time, to not only make the playoffs but get to the championship game, and. I think he's a remarkable case study in the level of support that he's attained so far, something that is incomparable in my experience in Virginia politics. But that's a long way from saying he's going to be our next governor.
Yeah.
If he gets 20%, as the caller just alluded to, he will have absolutely rocked the world in politics.
Victoria from Ridgeway, good morning to you. And how are you this morning, Victoria?
Greetings. Fine. How are you all?
We're great.
I just wanted to comment that this program is really an example of public radio doing its thing. And so I listen because I like the program, and today Sarvis really has my attention. My friends think that I would vote for a yellow dog before anybody else if there was no Democrat running. And I won't disabuse them of that idea. However, I am definitely paying attention to Sarvis. Does he have a website?
Yes, he does. Had you heard of Sarvis as a candidate before?
He was in the radar, but just a blip.
Okay. And when we give out website addresses on this program, you can also check out those websites on Facebook and on the virginiapublicradio.org page. But it's robertsarvis.com is where you go.
All right. Well,
thank you so much for your participation this morning. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for taking my call.
Andrew from Virginia Beach, good morning.
Hi. I have a comment. I heard what Sarvis said and what some of the comments and responses have been. But I did want to say that I think the most important comment was one that you said where you said the DEA supports y'all's program and y'all have endorsed Terry McAuliffe.
That the VEA has endorsed Terry McAuliffe. Yes, we want to make sure that there's full disclosure.
They support y'all financially. So, the only time that God ever cast down fire from heaven to destroy two cities was Sodom and Gomorrah for acts of sodomy. And King Cuccinelli stands against acts of sodomy because it destroys a society just like it did Greece and Rome. And he also stands against the murder of unborn babies. So I would encourage everyone, for the sake of Virginia, to vote for Ken Cuccinelli, a man who believes in the Ten Commandments. And no country or state can be built without obeying the Ten Commandments. So that's my only comment. God bless you. Bye.
Thank you for your call this morning. Yeah, Ken Cuccinelli was quoted back in 2008 when he spoke to the Family Foundation event saying, "When you look at the homosexual agenda, I cannot support something that I believe brings nothing but self-destruction, not only physically, but of their soul." There are people for whom this will resonate, and there are others for whom it won't.
Yeah, it turns on some. Look, Ken is sincere about his beliefs. He's unambiguous about them. What the caller said is there's plenty to back that up in the record for Ken. And, he's going to have enormous support from the faith community. These are people that I think would swim a raging river to vote for him. And that means something in elections because, polls can isolate likely voters, but you know, what if it's rainy? What if it's bad outside? There are voters, and then there are really those determined voters. And Ken has a very solid cadre of conservative religious voters who are going to go to the polls. However, those views also turn off many Virginians who disagree with it. You know, and that's the beauty of elections, because finally it's not talking heads like Don and me and you who decide the issue. It's you know, this wonderful thing happens. We turn it over to the voters of Virginia, and they do the work.
Forgive this very poor tie-in, but McAuliffe seems religiously tied to Medicaid expansion. Okay, good. I was hoping you'd like that. Because, you know, in the latest debate, he brought out Medicaid expansion as almost a solution for things that didn't seem apropos when we're talking about almost every policy, fiscal issue. I think cost of education reform, he brought out Medicaid expansion.
Yeah.
I know in the Mental Health Forum, he brought out Medicaid expansion.
It's absolutely his rabbit's foot.
It is.
Hey, I just had a wreck on the way in. What do I do? Expand Medicaid. he caught some flack the other night for not having numbers when Chuck Todd on the debate pressed him and said, give us a number. Tell us what the price tag for your education expansion is going to be. He wouldn't put a price tag on it, and I think he took a hit for that. But he prefaced it by saying none of that's possible without the expansion of Medicaid. He makes the argument that Virginia brings in 21 million over 4 years, I think is what, 21 billion, I think
he said. Billion
over 7 years, yeah. And that we couldn't do without that money. But you know, Cuccinelli makes the counterpoint that, hey, look, we're struggling with a $17 trillion debt right now. And depending on what happens in the next few days in Washington, we may have a government shutdown facing us. We've got an unsustainable debt in front of us. So he makes the point that don't depend on the federal money. It may not be there.
Yeah, I mean, I think on this, McAuliffe's love for Medicaid expansion aside, I mean, I think he's right on this one. I mean, it's you're sending Virginia federal tax dollars to Pennsylvania and Ohio, but you know, I'm not sure it solves every problem in Virginia any more than, you know, the transportation solution did, or, you know, the bond issue for state institutions of higher learning. I mean, it is a little bit strange, I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
We have a call from Christiansburg. Good morning to you, Pat. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey.
Hey there, Pat.
Well, only thing I can say is thank God for a libertarian, and I mean that sincerely. At least Sarva isn't in the mainstream. He doesn't walk to a puppet string, and, you know, I just think it's awesome that he's running and that we've got somebody that cares.
And had you heard of him before?
No, I hadn't, but I have sure boned up on finding out about him now. You know,
yeah, just curious. Yeah, go ahead.
Virginia it's a commonwealth, yes. But the people better wake up. They really had better wake up and open their eyes and their ears and their hearts. And, you know, they voted wrong the last time, and look what that's done to us. We're getting ready to go in all this mismush that's going on in D.C. To me, the way that they're trying to handle that, it looks like blackmail. But that's my opinion, you know, what opinions are. But I hope with all my heart that the Americans will wake up and vote for Sarvis. I really do. It's about time we got the little man in there again instead of those that are the money grabbers and the do-gooders that don't do good for us. And when they go out of office and Sarvis goes in for office, there's a country song that will hit it right on the head. Thank God and Greyhound, he's gone. And that's what I've got to say, because I think Sarvis would make a good man.
We appreciate your call this morning.
Somehow I'm not surprised she's a country music fan.
That's right. Thank you, Pat. And not far from you in Christiansburg is a caller in Roanoke. Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Hi, yes. Good morning to you. I listen to public radio quite a bit. And this morning I am so glad that I listen and I'm listening to you and have heard about Sarvis. I had not heard of him before, but like Carol and like your previous caller from Christiansburg, Sarvis will get my vote because I was so undecided as to who I was going to vote because I hate not to vote. But I almost was going to say I'm not going to, but I tell you now I am going to vote. Sarvis has got my vote 100% now.
And just to ask you, Frank, is it because of process of elimination or because you like the candidate?
Because I like Sarvis. To me, he's just someone that knows where you're going. Well, those other two guys, they don't. I don't know. I just don't like them. And it's almost like Congress. They need to send those kids in Congress back home and let them play with their marbles and get some good people up there. But Sarvis has got my vote, and that's all I can say.
Frank, we appreciate your call and your comment this morning. Warren from Virginia Beach, good morning to you. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Warren.
Yes. Yep. My name is Gordon, actually.
Oh, Gordon. Please forgive.
How are you doing? I wanted to make a comment about the previous caller that he was a conservative Catholic and voting for Cuccinelli. This is exactly what Mr. Sarvis is about, is freedom, because this gentleman is obviously trying to push his personal beliefs and calling it true freedom on everybody else. I do not agree with abortion, but it is the law, and it is a woman's right to choose. So therefore, I accept it. There are other things, like Sarvis was talking about, the drug war. Drugs are not good for you, but we spend so much money on locking people up in the courts, the police, and he's right. A lot of our personal liberties have been taken away. And I took offense to this man saying Christianity is, the way to true freedom, because I'm not a Christian, and I believe in freedom. Freedom isn't free. And by accepting that, that means we have to accept with things we don't necessarily agree with in order to be able to follow our personal beliefs.
And do you consider yourself Christian or Catholic?
I was raised a Christian, but I'm no longer accept Jesus Christ as my Savior. I believe in a higher power. But when I look at Christianity and its message and all the violence that's put behind it and the spreading of it, I really think that it's not a way of finding everlasting peace.
Thanks for your call this morning. Okay. And Andrew from Roanoke.
Hey, thanks for having my call. I just wanted to say that I am an atheist, and I'm a liberal, and I never thought that I would have something in common with a religious conservative, but a caller, maybe a dozen callers ago, was very conservative, and he encouraged all your listeners to vote for Sarvis, and I'd like to throw my weight behind that statement and encourage folks as well. He was really impressive throughout your interview with him, and I think that he can be a real unifier between liberals and conservatives alike, people who really vote with their mind and don't let their vote be pulled on a string by somebody who's claiming to be a religious leader or claiming to be a person who's going to provide handouts and entitlements. We've got somebody who seems really genuine, and we got an opportunity to vote for him. And I'd really like to encourage folks to take a look at Sarvis.
Thank you, Andrew. You got the proverbial last word among our callers. Let's turn to Bob and to Don just in our last 60 seconds.
I thought it was, in what I've just heard, I think is wonderful that we've heard this sort of cross-section of beliefs. It's rare that that you get such different pieces of the tapestry coming together on a program like this. So, I mean, this is really... It's been a good experience.
Don?
Yeah, it's remarkable. I think that, I would hope that all these people will spend some time now to really delve down into Mr. Sarvis's positions on a variety of issues. I think that's the next step.
That's Don Lozado, editorial page editor of the Virginian Pilot. Also joining us, Bob Lewis, political reporter for the Associated Press. We want to thank them both for joining in today's conversation. And thank you for your calls. Next week, it's all about prose and poetry. That's next Friday on Virginia Conversations. I'm May Lily Lee. Have a great week.
Virginia Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.